Dan Tolsman joins us, the head of scouting for your Toronto Raptors. Dan, how you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I know you're busy getting ready for the draft, so I appreciate you taking a few minutes out here. But
no problem.
I was looking at the number of draft picks, and the NBA draft is something that has always been one of those you got to make hay while the sun shines, because it's not like you've got, you know, it's not like baseball where there's 50 rounds. It's not even like there's hockey. Yeah. There's only a couple of rounds. It blows my mind. I was looking at it. Philadelphia has 6 draft picks.
Yeah.
That's insane. Have you ever seen a team have that many draft picks?
You know, I feel like they did last year as well. It's kind of just the motto they've been taking the last few years. And we kind of have a running joke that if you're a second round pick, the odds are you're getting drafted by Philly. So you work out for them and you're good.
Okay, so as far as this year's draft goes, we know it's pretty top-end heavy with a lot of one-and-doners. You got Karl Anthony Towns or Jahlil Okafor looking like they're going to go one or two, and Emmanuel Mudiay from the Congo going maybe 3, D'Angelo Russell. You know, then you still got names people know like Winslow and Kaminsky and Decker and Looney. And as far as talent, how does this draft stack up over the last few years?
You know, I really think it's a bit underrated. I think last year everyone was talking about all the talent up top, and seemed like it was like 6-7 deep of like really good potential stars. And then no one was really talking about this year's draft. But honestly, I think that this year's draft is deeper. I think that there might not be as many potential all-stars or franchise chasers in it, but there's a lot of really good talent within it that, you know, I think where we're sitting at 20, there's a very good chance that we get a player that we really like, which you don't always say that when you're sitting at 20.
And when you get to 20, how do you prepare? Look, I don't expect you to give away any secrets, but I'm intrigued by the different systems teams use for scouting and inputting information, and what happened with, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals hacking the Houston Astros. And that still, we have to, it remains to be seen how that's going to shake out and what level that came from. But it brought to light the systems that teams use to prepare and to scout. And it's called ground control. I guess that's the one that Houston uses. That's the name of their system. Mm-hmm. Do teams in the NBA all use the same system, or are there customized draft systems as far as computer programs, et cetera?
Yeah, no, I think it's just a team-to-team thing. I know there's a couple national programs that a number of teams subscribe to. We're not one of them. We have an in-house built thing that's customized just for us, and we kind of went that route for the same reason as kind of what you see going on now, just a little bit more added protection just to kind of keep it off the radar a little bit. So we just have an in-house one. But, yeah, no, there's every team has programs like that, and I think it's just a matter of, you know, what levels of securities you can use to keep it as private and top secret as possible is the big thing. But, yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, a way to compile just as many scouting reports as you can. I mean, it's honestly not that, you know, rocket science type of stuff that's in there. It's mainly just, you know, what you see the game and kind of how it's, that all those things added together help us build our opinions on guys. But it's nothing like crazy that's in them. It's more of just, you know, you get a feel for a way, which way a team is leaning on certain players, I guess.
Now, with the Raptors going into this draft and this offseason with a bunch of questions, a bunch of guys that can walk or be let go, and Lou Williams is, I guess, the marquee talent that's out there. And I think, Dan, that this year there's going to be a lot of movement in the offseason amongst a ton of teams. You know, you got Dwayne Wade's father wearing Cleveland Cavaliers stuff on the weekend, and then you've got Dwayne Wade having lunch with Kobe Bryant. So the teams, the landscape, especially I think in the East, is going to change considerably. When you go into the draft, and we're going to have Masai Ujiri on tomorrow morning at around 5 minutes after 9 o'clock for those of you listening, if you want to tune in. When you're going into the draft and you have a list of players that are potential picks for you, How much does the movement on the roster factor into your decision on Thursday in Brooklyn?
You know, a little bit. I mean, I think Masai will probably, he'll touch on this a lot tomorrow too, but I think it's really, it kind of, it lets us know what we're looking at as far as, you know, where one of these draft guys might sit on our depth chart. But honestly, like, we have to fill a 15-man roster, and, I mean, we've got, I think it's like six open spots that we're going to have to either bring our guys back or look to fill them somehow. So really anywhere on that board, a draft guy could sit. So it's not really a matter of like, okay, so-and-so is a free agent, like we have to replace him with the draft pick. It's more of like, is this guy talented enough to potentially replace that guy? And can he play, you know, play with him if we end up bringing him back? Like, it's a whole number of things that you kind of you take into account, but you definitely, at least in our situation, we would just take the most talented player available that we think could fit within the structure of our roster, and not so much see it as like, okay, this is so-and-so's replacement, now let's just move on and don't worry about signing that guy anymore type thing.
Dan Tolsman is our guest on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Joey Vendetta. Dan, of course, runs scouting for the Toronto Raptors. The Bruno Caboclo experiment this season kind of emphasized how much you need a D-League team, your own D-League team and your own D-League team in Toronto. It looks like that is happening. And how important is the D-League as far as developing these players, and how important is it to have them close by so you can work with them and keep an eye on them?
Yeah, you know, I think, I mean, we're still working on it. It's not nothing official yet. We're waiting on a number of, like, application processes going through to see if we're good to go. But like you said, it's definitely kind of in the works, and we're just doing all the paperwork and all that stuff right now. But, I mean, yeah, we approached this with that in mind. Like, basically, like, we wanted to, you know, do our best to try and get something, especially close to the team, just so that we, a guy like Bruno and even Lucas, Nogueira, guys like that who, you know, they're not quite ready to contribute a lot on our regular roster, but it gives them a chance to still be around our team on, you know, in practice and everything, and then quickly go and play in real live games, which is where so much of the development process happens, just the spur of the moment decision making and just the live action that you cannot replace in a practice. Those are the types of things that you get guys, young guys, good minutes in a situation like that. It's invaluable. So I think kind of one of the mindsets we had when we all came up here to Toronto a couple years ago was that we have to build this franchise like for the future. And I think that one of the best ways to do that is to get young, talented players that we can then develop in the way that we see them, and we think that they'll fit with our roster. And one of the best ways to do that is through the D League.
And how do you control, and I guess that's the reason why you want a D League franchise in Toronto, because I guess you don't have much control, but talk about the dynamic when a guy like Bruno goes to Fort Wayne to play for the Mad Ants, and they share 10, I think it was like 10 NBA teams shared that franchise, and he'd be sitting on the bench for a long period of time. How much communication would you have with Fort Wayne, and how is playing time and the development structured, or is it even structured at all? Is it just kind of a free-for-all?
Yeah, I mean, it was a difficult situation for him and Fort Wayne, mainly because even more than all the different affiliates at the NBA, with the different NBA teams, it was mainly the fact that they were an independent team, and their goal was to win games and sell tickets, and really, like, it wasn't so much about the development of our players. You know, like, they have no like real purpose to just put him in and see what happens. Like, they're trying to win a D-League championship. And so it was difficult to send him down there, even if there weren't many other NBA assignment guys. Like, they had guys that already knew the system, that were playing well, and they couldn't just plug in a 19-year-old kid in place of him and, you know, maybe lose a game because they're giving Bruno 30 minutes. And so it was a tough situation for him in that. But you know, at the same time, like we were in a lot of communication with the team, with the coaches and the their front office, and they were very open about, hey, you know, like we're going to do our best to get him in, but we really have to win these next few games. So there's no promises on what he does. And, you know, that's the situation we were in, and that's, you know, just something we had to live with. And I think, if anything, it was another reason why we were pushing to get our own team, so that, you know, it's not so much about the profit or the anything like that, wins and losses. It's more about, we know it's about the product, as far as like developing the players and getting them ready to one day be on our main roster, which, I mean, in the long term, that's probably the most important thing, more than anything.
Dan, it's really about you not having to go to Fort Wayne anymore, isn't it?
Nah, you know, I'm not going to say that, because there's a lot of great little D-League cities out there that, you know, it's like I went to college in a small town in the middle of nowhere, and I think it just adds to the stories, you know, the travel to get to where you're going.
Where did you go to college?
Morris, Minnesota, about 3 hours west of the Twin Cities.
So there's more people listening to this interview than are in Morris, Minnesota, right?
I would hope so. Yeah, if you're doing your job, then there definitely is.
So and before we let you go, a couple more questions. Again, thanks for doing this. The NBA Finals kind of, I won't say exposed, but it shed light on the whole going small concept in a big way, because the Golden State Warriors had to adapt to the type of game that Cleveland was playing, a desperate game, an in-your-face game, and they, I won't say luckily, but Steve Kerr made an adjustment by removing Andrew Bogut, and Tim, you know, Mozgov came off the bench for 9 minutes in Game 5, and I think that was the game that turned the series around. Look, the Cleveland Cavaliers were playing a big game, and Golden State was having trouble with it. Once Golden State went small, everything changed. And Dwayne Casey's kind of, it looks like he's on board to some of these new concepts. And it happened earlier in the season when you guys played Golden State and Spites was shooting the ball really well, and you had to go small, and Jonas didn't play a ton of minutes in that game. Is there a trend you're seeing towards small ball? Because there's a bunch of seven-footers in this draft. How do you balance that?
Yeah, I think the NBA is so based on trends. You know, it's like right now, yeah, everyone's talking about, just like you're saying. I think it's more of not so much small as much as it is interchangeable. Just guys that can play multiple positions, guys that can defend multiple positions, to where – the pick and roll is so important now in NBA basketball. You want guys that can, you know, just switch over and guard multiple positions, whether it's the screener, the ball handler, you know, rollers, pop guys, all that type of stuff. You want guys that can just easily change in between them. And I think it just so happened that Golden State, you know, I mean, yeah, they went small, but, I mean, they also had the I think is the number one defensive efficient team in the NBA. So they had the ability to do that. I mean, you can't just go small and hope that everything works out, because unless you have good, strong defenders, regardless of what size they are, that's going to be the key. I mean, if Golden State was a weaker defensive team, I think Cleveland would have been able to pound on them with their size, and then that would have been the outcome of the series that everyone would be talking about. But I think it's more of, if you defend well and defend the pick and roll well, which is kind of the way that the NBA is going nowadays, that's the most important thing, regardless of how big the players are. And I think as far as JV goes, he's going to be just fine no matter what the trends are. And there's so many other seven-footers in the draft that are like that. It's just a matter of getting them comfortable and using them defensively the best that you can to allow them to be on the court as much as possible, because they do enough other things to kind of make up for, you know, whatever size trends are going on or not. Like every team, you know, they have the big guys, and the big guys end up being the difference in a number of games just because of their size.
And last question, again, Dan Tolsman's our guest, head of scouting for the Toronto Raptors NBA draft on Thursday in Brooklyn. How much does the Final Four tournament, specifically the Final Four, impact draft stock? Do you think it's too much, Dan? Because if you look at, again, the way Kaminsky played and Decker played at Wisconsin, they really became notable in the last, you know, in when we got down to the Sweet 16 is when they really started to shine. And I think that increased their draft stock. Do you think there's too much emphasis placed on the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, and the Final Four?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the big thing is to think about is that players like that, like they're getting on the radar a little more as far as the public perception of these guys go. But I mean, we've been scouting these guys for, you know, the whole season, if not multiple seasons, depending on how long they've been in school or, you know, in high school and whatnot. And so we're well aware of them, and we usually have our opinions pretty much set on the guys earlier than the tournament goes. But it's also a good way to kind of confirm different thoughts on guys, because the talent of the competition is so much better and harder in the tournament that you get to see these guys against much bigger, stronger, faster players than what you did maybe during the regular season, depending on what night you caught them. And I think that people can get caught up in a guy that plays extremely well in the tournament. It's a little bit of false, a false idea of how good they are. But at the same time, it does, you get to see how guys compete in pressure situations and big, lose or go home, or lose and go home type environments. And I think that it does, there is some strength to that as far as scouting goes. But like I said, we've had our opinions on these guys set for quite a while. And honestly, I kind of just sit back and watch the tournament and enjoy it more for good scouting, for seeing them against the best other play, like the other guys within like the first round, and like kind of see how they go against each other. But I don't really hold too much in like taking anything away from a guy or building him up anymore based on how he did in the tournament, just because, I mean, it's a little bit of a false sense of how good they are based on that stuff.
Dan, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it. I know you're crazy busy getting ready for the draft, and I know you can handle those big moment spotlight situations. The weight of Raptor Nation rests on your shoulders, so I'm sure you're up for the task.
Thanks so much, Joe. Yeah, we're doing our best. We're gonna find someone for sure at 20. That's our goal this year.